When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of The Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
Well, you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode. Welcome back, guys. Brought to you by Sports Shoes, as always. And very exciting episode for you today. Matt has just sat down with Mr. George Mills, a couple hours ago, mate? And he's going to tell us all about it now.
Well, I'll let Mills tell his story. No, I mean, top 10 all time in the 3000, faster than Mo Farah, Josh Kerr, faster than Kipchoge, faster than Bekele indoors as well. It's pretty impressive. And so we thought we better find out, you know, what's been going on. I think what was cool, mate, is we last spoke to Mills in Dubai. And, I was in Dubai with him. That was 2021, so that's 4 years ago now. And so a lot's changed in that, as episode 11 for the OG listeners. So a lot's changed in that time.
Yeah, and that is something that's quite interesting, because we've had a lot of people over the years sort of say, oh, you're overlooking George Mills, that sort of thing. And we've always kind of gone back to that and said, look, he's someone we got on the pod a long time ago, and we chatted to him, not even at the start of his journey. He'd already done a lot on the junior stage and had obviously earned his spot.
Champ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, earned his spot on the pod. But I think people kind of forget that we had him on a long time ago and have been obviously watching him bubble away in the background for a bit. But yeah, he's very much become, I guess, when it comes to distance running anyway, a household name in the past year or two. So for me, obviously you spoke to him yourself without me today, but what was his biggest reflection on the run the other day? Like, was he expecting to run that quick?
Yep, short answer, he was. I think he's just getting better and better and better every year that goes by. There's another year where he's executed training. I mean, he's had very little injuries, if any, you know, in the past 3 years. And I think what's scary if you're his opposition, and not so much eye-opening for us, but I do admire it, is he's just an all-or-nothing guy. And I think he is so all-in. Like, there is no stone left unturned. And he is just all about the game. He's all about racing. He's all about training. And anything that gets, you know, in his way of that, you know, he just basically is able to eliminate out of his life. He's at altitude an incredibly large part of the year as well. And, you know, and I think distance running, I mean, you're up against Kenyans and Ethiopians who are born there and live there. If you really want to compete globally over the 5,000, I mean, you look where Grant Fisher now bases himself. You look anyone who's anyone coming out of NAU. They obviously base themselves, you know, OAC America are obviously based at altitude. And I think, is there now an argument the way this sport is? Can you get by as even a 1500 runner if you're not at altitude for at least 6 to 8 months of the year?
Yeah, I think so. It's going that way, isn't it? And I think just elite sport in general, like even if you can get away with it, why would you take the risk? Like if you have the financial backing from a brand or whoever it is, or you're part of a group that's able to do that, why do you take the risk of not doing it? That's my, I guess, counter. Like, yeah, you might be able to get away with it, but why would you risk not doing it, even if it's going to give you just a bit of a mental edge or whatever? Why would you risk not doing that, to be honest? And I think for George Mills does have his critics, right? Like, and I'm sure there's some people like who are critics listening to this as well, but that's one thing you cannot fault the guy for. Like you say, Matt, is he is all in, and he doesn't leave any stone unturned in his pursuit of being the best. And that is, he's also unapologetic about that, right? He's not trying to be a pro and try and make teams. The guy's trying to win medals.
I think, yeah. And then just to finish on that point, he's been all in for quite a few years now. And I guess what truly is all in, like, what does that look like? But, you know, I think the extremes of the way that he lives his life and everything he does is in a calculated manner in order to get him faster, get him better. And I think, you know, these performances haven't just come from double threshold. They've come from everything that he's done in the past 3 and a bit years. So yeah, credits to him. Do we get a huge insight on his training? No, but I'll let you listen to the podcast.
Yeah, 100%. So over to George. And as always, guys, we hope you enjoy the episode. We'll catch you very, very soon.
Well, a special welcome back to British record holder and world leader in the 3000, Mr. George Mills. A terrific run last weekend. And George, the last time we spoke, we were in a hotel room in Dubai 4 years ago. I think it was episode 11 of the podcast. So I don't think many listeners today will probably remember that episode. Shout out if you are an OG listener, and you do. But mate, a lot has changed. And let's just quickly touch on the weekend, because I was on commentary and it took me by complete surprise, to be honest. I was thinking it's a season opener. The field, you know, it wasn't that deep. And I was like, surely he's just going to box off a few qualifying times. But it was a special performance.
Yeah, it was good. We planned for it to run the standard for world indoors. So we always wanted to set it up to be quick. But obviously that's just dipping under sub 7:31. That would be. But yeah, fortunately, it went pretty well. Training's been good and managed to execute the race how we wanted.
Did you see that coming, a world lead and a British record? Obviously, you wanted the standard, but did you see yourself doing it first attempt, or did you only have one? Like,
you have an idea, right? Like, you've, from like the bulk of training you're doing, you know how shape will be, especially with how we do it. Everything's very systematic, a lot of similar things. So I had an idea that I was in shape and was very capable of running the standard, and obviously there was the British record and everything like that in the back of my mind, which I was like, okay, if I do execute it right, this should very much be a possibility.
I think something I want to touch on a little bit as well, you seem to be absolutely fine and very, very confident running on your own for that last kilometer. Is that a testament to the shape you're in when you're hot, you know, you can execute like that? Or is it down to more the way you train? Like, we see Jakob and, you know, those guys who follow that double threshold, they are very confident front running. So is that more down to the way you train?
I think it's something I've been comfortable with my whole life, to be honest. Coming through as a younger athlete, did a lot of training on my own and front run a lot of races in the past as well. So it's something that I'm very used to. But I will say that indoors, it's significantly easier to front run than outdoors, because obviously you don't have the wind factor and you're just ticking off the laps, and it's almost, you don't really have any time to think, because you're almost just in like a little bit of a whirlwind, just you keep turning sort of thing. But yeah, obviously you have to be in slightly better shape to be able to front run, and I think we were prepared for that as well. And we knew before it would be the case that if I wanted to run the time, that I'd have to push on the last 1200 anyway, because the pacers were planned to go to 1800.
Mate, is it stressful when even someone of your level, European silver medalist over the 5000, you know, is it stressful having to box off these qualifying marks when they're getting so fast now? Like, even the very best in the world have to think about where they're going to attack it.
Yeah, it's definitely not an easy thing. Like, to run, I have to run 7:30 for 3K. You can't just turn up and to any old race. You have to really prepare properly. But I think that's a good thing, because people want to run quick, and people want to see fast times as well. So I think it's a good thing. But yeah, you definitely have to give it more mental focus and actually focus with training than you probably did in the past when they were a bit slower.
Yeah, that's fair. Here, let's rewind then. Let's go back to Dubai. You were very much being coached by John Big. So you were actually a double British champion at the time, I think, indoors and out. And that was 20...
I haven't won one since then.
Yeah, I was going to say, but you beat me to it. But jokes aside, I can't quite remember when the transition to OAC and Thomas was. What was the timeline?
So I've been with Thomas just over 3 years now. I joined in January 2022.
Okay.
So that's when the team first formed, and yeah, ever since then I've been with him and with OAC, and it's very much a move that changed the path of my career. I don't think that I would be the like well-rounded athlete I am now with the times I've put down without the setup from OAC and also his coaching and how he's made this really good training environment for us.
You seem to have always been pretty good at acknowledging when you need to move on. And go chase, you know, a different setup, a different coach. You know, first it was, you know, your youth coach, Joanne Day. And then I remember speaking to you in Dubai, and that was one of the big conversations 4 years ago, is when you made that kind of bold move to go down to Brighton quite young. Were you 20 at the time or 21?
Yeah, you 18.
18, just yeah. Starting, like most people starting, are going, yeah. Yeah. And you'd gone down there and synced up with John then. And then you quickly identified, was it the case of an opportunity was on the cards, or were you actually seeking?
Yeah, I wasn't looking for something actually. We'd actually spoke that we wanted to change training a little bit just between me and John, like we were going to focus a bit more on the endurance stuff. But then around October, November, there was like, my agent came to me with that On might be starting this group, this thing. And I had some conversations in December and whatever. And I was like, oh, I'm an idiot if I don't take this. Like, this is the opportunity of a lifetime. And like, if I really want to take myself seriously as a professional athlete, I have to do it.
Man, and it's snowballed since then. And it didn't seem to take you long to transition to that, to the style of training.
Yeah, and I think it probably took me about 18 months to start to really be able to do it properly. The first year wasn't crazy, like the 2022 I like improved by a second or something over the 1500, but that probably would have happened anyway. But then 23 and obviously 24 last year, there was some big progressions.
Why did it take you, actually that's a bit longer than I thought actually, but why do you think it took you that 12-18 months to transition? Because obviously, is it because John's training was almost like the polar opposite, wasn't it? It was very high intense. I remember seeing you rip some 300s and stuff. So did it take you a while to sort of get used to that lactate work?
Exactly, yeah. It was like a little bit backwards to go forwards, I'd say. Like, you stagnate for 6, 12 months, but then obviously like now you can see that the work that you've put in that time is really, like, has set a really good foundation to build on now. And it's also, it was a lot of changes. Like, you, obviously you're on camp a lot more. Or I basically live at altitude now, because that's how we've seen how it works in the last year or so for me. But it was a lot more training camps. Like, you're never really in the UK for training and various things like that. So there was a big transition. Obviously, it was a new team coming together, so we all had to work together to try and work out what was the best way to do it.
Mm. I want to touch on altitude, Dean. You do virtually live there. How many months a year are you up at altitude? And for
how many, probably 8 or 9 months maybe.
And yeah, you think a couple of weeks out of that is competing as well in the down period. And from your training and your physiology, you clearly identified that it's a must.
Yeah, I think for me it really works, but it's very much an environment thing as well. Like the locations that you are on training camp, it's very much just you're there and you train. There's nothing else to do. And that's something that I really thrive on and really enjoy. And it's places where I feel at home and feel very comfortable doing all the training. And we've been able to create like the environment a little bit to like really optimize it, both here in South Africa and in St Moritz, where we're based out of in the summer.
Yeah, you talk about the environment. You're someone who, I guess, has showcased and let us into the inner circles of your life. And you are very, very dedicated, almost radical.
That's the one way to put it. Yeah.
Mate, I mean, you're acting like, you know, just a world-class athlete, right? And I think for some people, they might not be accustomed to it. But when did you sort of decide to go that deep, if you like, take that next step around, because your diet and everything, you've obviously been vocal.
You know, it was clearing there that was up. It's when I obviously that's the diet and everything and the day-to-day living has developed over the last 3 years, just like learning more, working with nutritionists and stuff, and like talking with teammates and whatsoever. But it was, as soon as I joined the group, I remember I said to Thomas, I was like, I will do whatever we need to do. If you need me to spend all year at altitude, I'll do it. Like nothing. I'll like throw myself into this and work as hard as possible to try and be the best athlete I can. So it was very much, I was just fully committed to the team and wanting to become the best athlete I could be. And then in terms of the diet and day-to-day living, it's just something that's like slowly develops. Like every couple of months, every year, you find something new and you think, okay, let's maybe add this in, see if it can help.
It's one thing saying you'll do everything you possibly can, it's another executing it. Has Thomas been quite impressed?
You'd have to ask him. I can't be putting words in his mouth. He'll always say this. I think we're very similar in the way we probably always think there's a little bit more we could be doing, which is good. It keeps you humble and focused.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think what you're doing now, is that a necessity to be at your level, do you believe?
I don't see myself getting to where I want to be if I did it any other way, to be honest. I think, like, you could call it sacrifice everything. I don't see it like that because I'm working towards certain goals that are above everything. So it's just, like, necessary. And I joke around like saying, make your life a training camp and these sorts of things. But essentially, if you can remove any outside distractions and just have everything focused on training and racing, then I don't really see any reason why you won't eventually get to where you want to be.
Is life lonely in the fast lane, which you are?
Yeah. It's just a really, really good environment. It makes it more fun when you've got 10, 12 lads and... Well, 10, 12 people in the team. We have like 7 guys, 6 girls, and it's just, yeah, it makes it really fun. It kind of takes away the seriousness of it because you're like having a laugh and you're still executing the training the way you need to.
Yeah, I see you've had a few changes. Who, you know, what men are on that team now? Because I'm not sure if everyone will be familiar with them.
We have, it's me, Sebastian Fry, Mohamed Atawi. It was 5th in Paris. Corentin Leclesio, Federico Riva, Luke McCann, and Noah Baltus. Yeah, so seven of us guys. Oh, and Jonas Rest. Sorry, almost forgot him.
Did he?
The old dog.
Did the 800 guys train similar to you?
So look, Thomas's philosophy. There's like Thomas's baseline philosophy, which is threshold and endurance based. But obviously, the work that I do is very different to like the 800 guys. Like we have, like there's the same fundamentals of you've got to do your threshold work, you've got to do your gym and easy work. But when it comes to the workouts you're doing and the race prep stuff, it's very different.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. That would have been intriguing. Here, mate, let's catch up then on the last 12 months or even sort of 6 months because it's been mega. How about we start with the European Championships silver medal behind Jakub? It was a great race, and I'm going to ask you, do you feel like you peaked there?
In hindsight, you'd probably say I did peak there, but the training that I actually was doing for the 6 to 8 weeks after leading into Paris was actually better than what I was doing before. So just on race performance, and that was probably my best race for last year, you would say, yeah, he peaked at that point, but the training was actually continuing to improve throughout the year. And I know it sounds like such an excuse, but going into Paris after London Diamond League, I picked up COVID, and like one day to another, I was just complete, or it was 20 beats higher on an easy run, and I was like blowing out of my arse doing anything, basically.
Yeah, bloody hell, that was a
factor that changed things. But look, it's how things go, and you just have to deal with the situations the best you can. And I think I tried to do that.
Mm. Yeah. Did the result change things after you got that silver? Like, I wonder where your head was at going in. Obviously, you were one of the fastest in the field, but sort of, you know, actually getting out there, proving it,
yeah,
and going, you can do it in a championship environment.
Mentality in terms of what, like what?
Just going
what
Olympics.
I expect
from
myself,
yeah, I think off the back of that, was it easy to, I guess, change your goals for the Olympics, or was it kind of very steady the whole way through?
It was very, very steady the whole way through. I was probably a bit surprised with how well the 5K went last year. Because in 23, we kind of planned it to be a bit more of a backup to the 1500. And then in hindsight, it was probably my better event last year with the races I performed in. I think there was a good 1500 in there. We just didn't race at the right time for that. So that's something that I still really want to do. But no, I wouldn't say it changed so much. It was more just reassurance again that we're doing the right thing and that I'm able to perform at the level that I think I should be performing at.
Mm. Yeah, because I wondered if it would be easy to kind of put more pressure on yourself and expect more, I guess, in Paris. But you're right, like 2023, didn't you run 3:30 that year and you only did 1 5,000?
Yeah.
But obviously that winter, you were thinking about doing the 5. Were you thinking about doing the 5,000 Olympics that winter, despite
having? Yeah, so obviously you know how hard the 1500 team is to make in the UK. So we looked at it and we're like, okay, the 5K is considerably weaker in terms of the depth there. So it was like, okay, let's try to run the standard in the 5K as like a backup because you never know how the 1500 will go. And then it turned out that I was pretty strong across both events. So we decided, okay, let's go for both. Why not? An Olympics every 4 years, we may as well try.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Do you regret going for both in Paris?
No, I actually think it's the best decision I could have made, which sounds weird because of the results. But I'd say I got five very different. Well, bear in mind, this was my second major championships outdoors. Euros was my first. So I got five different bouts of experience that I think will really help me over the next 4 years at various championships.
Yeah. And then
because usually you get two or three max, and we were able to get five within 8 days.
And
also there was like various things that we were struggling with in terms of the shape, just because of illness and the forum whatsoever. So it was like a highly stressful situation, and you almost had to just try and find something within my body that wasn't there.
I could argue you had a lot of different experiences. Yeah, you talk about in training as well, but then off the track with all the drama at the games, like, you know, that's probably enough for anyone.
Yeah, I think that the incident, I guess, shows the intensity of the whole competition and the stress that everybody's under. And yeah, I think it's one of those things. Yeah, in terms of like the race scenarios and going through like the warm-ups and recovering between the rounds, especially with the repechage thing in there, that's something that I think will prepare me really well for this year's major championships and also ones in the future.
Yeah, I think the way that you towed the line every time, I guess, has to be admired, because you know there were a few occasions in that Olympic Games where do you look back and you think, well, that couldn't have gone much worse. You know, the way the outcome of certain races happened, like, you know, the 5000 heat or something like that. But then you've got the experience there of picking yourself back up and towing the line and going to all the warm-up and the cool room and everything like that, seeing all those guys out on the warm-up track again.
Exactly. So there's a lot of good, a lot of positives to take from it. And obviously it's a bit of a cliche, you say that you'll learn from it, but I already feel it in how we prepare for competitions now. And I feel much more aware about what to expect when we go into ones in the future.
Did you have any negative sort of press get you down, affect you? Like after Paris, did you really just want to take a complete step back for a period?
After Paris, I just wanted to train and get fit again. But Thomas was like, I tried to run Lausanne. Well, I ran like 3:37, came like last or something, and was like, okay, I think it's time to take a bit of a break. So we took a couple of weeks off, and then like slowly started to build back on Pitten's training, which was very, very important.
Yeah. Yeah, you probably need that. What are the goals, you know, sort of when you sat down with Thomas end of the year? Can you talk about what you were discussing? World indoors?
Not too specifically, but I'll just say that we want to win medals and run fast. And I think that's what every athlete in the world's trying to do. Like, I've had a taste of a medal at Europeans, and I really want to make my mark on the world stage. So, yeah, this indoor season, I'll be going for medals at both Euro and Worlds, hopefully, pending selection, and then the same in summer, pending selection, of course.
Yeah, brilliant. I want to just talk about, if you can, talk about just training a little bit, because obviously we know you adopt that double threshold, but surely it's not just double threshold that gets you to run 7:27. You must have to do something else in there to run that time. So kind of what were pretty much
what it says on the tin. I'm not gonna lie, it's nothing too fancy. It's double threshold system, and obviously we have done a little bit of, I guess you could call it 3K specific work, but not a great deal. Like, we, over the winter and stuff, like whilst we're being here, we want to like really build the foundation for the years. So that's been the main focus, and I'm just very fortunate that I'm able to run well off the threshold work.
Has it scaled up? Has your training, you know, from when you moved there, obviously you had that adaptive period, but let's even go back to 2023, you know, we're now 18 months on from that. Has the training scaled up, or are you just kind of repeating?
So obviously you make subtle changes, and you slowly increase volume, and obviously as you get fitter, the intensity gets, or the pace gets faster as you start to improve. So that's always something that you have to be wary of. But again, it'll be like, it's another cliche. It's just, I think this is something that just takes years to not master, but get good at. So I think it's very much just year on year, just keep stacking and doing the basic fundamentals that get you to improve every year.
And you have got time. I mean, are you 25, 26?
25, 26 in May. So yeah, mate, I'll run as long as my body lets me. If it lets me go till 40, 45, happy days.
Do you feel like that double threshold will allow you to go, you know, well into your 30s at a high level?
So obviously it's a lower intensity training system, but it's obviously very high volume. So there is a lot of training frequency and also, overall my like volume. So it's obviously pretty strenuous on the body, but that's a question I have no idea. I hope so.
Yeah, because I always wonder with the double threshold and the high volume, if you have a couple injuries in a year's cycle, is it as effective? Like, does that, I guess it's like any injury, right? But
yeah, I think it's probably the same across all training systems. I guess it depends how solid your base is. So I guess the more years of consistency you have, the more easier it is to come back from small issues or something.
Yeah. Man, and then, so you don't plan to race again until Champs?
Yeah, so I'm back in South Africa now. Flew straight back after the race in Val d'Huez, and then be here for probably 2.5 weeks and fly into Birmingham, run the 3K at Nationals, which looking forward to, can hopefully finally add on to my two national titles.
Mate, I think
from 2020.
Yeah, I think tickets are gonna sell fast. There's some good matchup. Do you look at the landscape of British distance running, but also global distance running, and do you expect it to, you know, because I think that LA is going to look very different to Paris, because there's quite a few men
the faces,
because I think there's quite a few people who went to Tokyo and Paris, you know, so they've already had kind of those two, that 4 year cycle there, 4 or 5 years.
That was only a 3 year cycle, so it was a bit closer.
Yeah, but then I'm like, to extend, you know, from Tokyo to extend that all the way to LA, that, do you think that's difficult, or do you think it's going to be very, very similar faces for the next 3 or 4 years in this sport?
I think it's like anything, there will always be some people who are still there, and there will always be some people that are new. I don't know, nothing's ever the same. Like the medalists usually always change. But I think if you look at, I expect there will be very similar guys there, but also there'll be some new faces competing. And I think that's what makes the sport exciting, and that every year that there's somebody new who can come up and win. So I imagine there probably wasn't many people who predicted that Cole would win the 15 in Paris.
No, and probably not 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's exciting. So yeah, I guess it's a lot of work to do over the next 3 or 4 years, and we'll see who's there.
Yeah, because do you think times are going to keep progressing? Like, in your head, have you just got to get to a 12:45? 5,000 or 12:40, 5,000, be in that ballpark, and you're like, well, if I'm there, surely I'm going to be good enough to win? Or are you like, God, but in 4 years time, I might really need to be quicker than that?
Good question. I think obviously the goal is to get down to the low 12:40s or around that, because that's what the medalists are running. So that's the goal. But I presume if you look over the recent years, that trend would be that it will continue to get quicker leading into LA, but you obviously never know. But yeah, you'd say it's likely that the medalist there will probably be sub-12.
Yeah. And then just finally, OAC Europe especially, that they do a terrific job at looking after you. I mean, do you want to talk about kind of what you get as an athlete? Like, obviously, you spend 9 months of the year at altitude. Have you got 24/7 physio or like what's... But you, from your channel and stuff, YouTube, it does it like you sometimes get out there and you do get it done on your own. You're grinding solo and in a remote location.
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously everybody... We're obviously a training group, but everybody has slightly different plans, and there's... Some of us spend more time at altitude. Obviously, I'm one of the ones who's at the upper end of the spectrum on that. And then there's others who more time at sea level need a bit more work there. But yeah, it's amazing. I mean, we have two coaches, two physios who are 80% of the time always there with us. There might be a couple of weeks or at the start or end of a camp where you're there alone if you're adding on a little bit extra. But yeah, all around, the service is amazing. And like I said earlier, it definitely wouldn't be where we are now if it wasn't for the whole environment that they've created.
Mm. Brilliant. Well, just before we finish, mate, what is your threshold? Like, what poke? What is your threshold speed? Can you tell us that?
That's a lot of information. It's depends where we run it, but maybe it'll come up in a YouTube video if people are watching.
Okay. I'll tell you what, how close to your 5K speed is it? Is it a couple seconds slower or quite a lot?
Oh, no, it's quite a bit off 5K.
Quite a bit
pace.
Off 5K.
5K pace is quick. The race pace that was I think it was 2:35 5K pace was for the bottom last year. So, yeah, not close to that yet. Need to work a bit.
Good stuff, man. Well, it's been a pleasure, mate. And yeah, thanks for hopping on. I know you're a busy guy, and we'll look forward to seeing you in Birmingham.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, and we'll speak soon.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.